this week in Loikamania, we talk about way too many comics. We talk about Iron Man 2. And we kind of talk about the end of an era in the Marvel Universe. But we will have to do that after this. This is Pat Loika, your host for this podcast we all know as Loikamania. This is episode 5, and I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and that's because I've been under the weather, and I really did not feel like recording with having such a horrible voice. And yeah, I know, I sound horrible anyway, but still. That's besides the point. Anyway, I was thinking of going back and talking about the stuff I had gotten in the last couple of weeks, but I figured it would be a waste of time if we did that. I'm sure you already know what happened in those books anyway, so there's no point in me going through that. Instead, I'll talk about stuff that came out this week, and I'll talk a little bit about the Iron Man 2 movie, which I absolutely enjoyed, and kind of expound a bit on Lost from last night, which is what I always do. And as far as this week's releases go, there were a lot of big books came out. There is final issue of Dark Avengers, final issues of Siege and Siege Embedded, and of course the Siege Fallen one shot, which I will not ruin for you. I will not ruin anything from Siege. I will say this much though: I really enjoyed this event. I thought it was assembled really well and the tie-ins were handled really well, because whenever you read a Siege tie-in, it always refers to something that happens in the main book. And if you read all the titles, it actually expands the scope of this project. I mean, it's a fairly big event going on in the Marvel Universe, as it is, at least on Earth. And then if you read the other books, it tells you all the stuff that happens in between scenes or within moments of each other, really. And the tie-ins here, this is probably the best utilization of tie-ins in big crossover events I've seen in a while. I mean, Secret Invasion was kind of cool because they kind of pulled the curtain behind what's happened in the main invasion itself. But this actually, the tie-ins here, they actually expand on the main story, which is always a plus in my opinion. You know, it enhances the story, gives it a bigger scope, and a lot of stuff. I mean, the biggest problem with some of the books that came out last week, like New Avengers and some of the other titles that shipped, was that it kind of told you how Siege number 4 was going to go, because those books were meant to ship the same week as Siege number 4, but Siege got delayed because they added more pages. And you can kind of tell, you can actually almost assemble what the events of issue 4 from some of those books that they had put out in the last couple of weeks. I mean, if by the time you had picked up issue 4, you're already aware of the big plot twist that takes place within the first few pages of the book. And it's kind of lame that they kind of had to ruin like a major plot point of the book. Thankfully, that plot point is just one of many, many plot points that take place within Siege number 4. There is, there was a major character that's involved in the beginning of this story is actually involved in that plot twist. So, once again, this week's Siege books include Avengers: The Initiative, Dark Avengers number 16, Siege number 4, Siege Embedded number 4, and of course the New Avengers finale. And all of these books are really, really closely tied together. And there's also that Fallen one shot, which I will not reveal the full title of, although by this point, if you haven't seen it at the shop, well, you know, that's all on you. At least I did my part not to spoil it. So yeah, give these books a try. If you've been reading the story from the beginning, well, it's a kind of a satisfying conclusion to all that. And actually, this kind of brings me to the next thing I want to talk about. It's not a single book, but rather a status quo within the Marvel Universe. Now, it's no secret to everyone that the moment Brian Michael Bendis took over the Avengers book back in 2004, things were going to be a little bit different. And it's because, you know, people are thinking of the way he wrote the books. But the thing is, when he took over Avengers and he did Disassembled, it was the beginning of a rather crazy era in the Marvel Universe. Lots of upheaval, lots of changes going on. I mean, the Avengers Disassembled story pretty much is responsible for the events that came after it, like the House of M, the Civil War, World War Hulk, the death of Captain America. All that stuff came because of Avengers Disassembled. I mean, if you read Avengers Disassembled closely, you'll even notice that there's a Skrull running around in there, and the Skrulls eventually came back to be a bigger problem for everyone in the Marvel Universe. Now that Siege has come to an end, and with that, not just Siege or not just the Dark Reign ending, it's this whole era of the Marvel Universe where there's a lot of distrust, there's a lot of drama, you know, like drama not in a way that, you know, not in the gripping storytelling, but rather like the status quo with the characters and the way they acted towards each other. Like it's putting an end to a very hostile and very, very untrusting time amongst amongst the characters. And this time around, with the heroic age, we're seeing a very bright, very happy, very optimistic outlook towards superheroes and the universe. And a lot, and you know, when Siege number 4 ended, it actually took care of one dangling plot point from that whole era of the Marvel Universe. Now, I myself enjoyed the last few years since Disassembled. I mean, I kind of go with the flow as far as the stories go, you know, and I try to stick around, and you know, if I like what I'm reading, I stick around with it. And I've been pretty pleased with the books that have been coming out. And the thing is, it was also a very polarizing time, because I know a lot of people who are like old school fans who kind of dropped the books because of the status quo and what's been going on. I know a lot of people who were gravitated towards these books because it's different and it's a fresh take on the characters. But now that era has changed, has come and gone, you know, what could possibly be next? I mean, yes, we know the heroic age, we know it's going to be a somewhat happier time in the Marvel Universe, but what kind of threats will we be seeing these characters face from this point? I mean, what will be the main source of drama if they've already dealt with pretty much all the issues they've had with each other over the last few years? I think there's only one dangling plot thread that still remains to be dealt with, and I think that will be dealt with later on, and I'm referring to the Scarlet Witch, of course. So it's an interesting time to be reading these books, and an interesting time to, you know, to be a Marvel fan, because there's really a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it's gotten to that point where even the X-Men will be involved in the heroic age later on once they get through their event. And I think they have a crossover with Dracula or something coming up later too that they need to deal with. But there's going to be an Uncanny X-Men heroic age miniseries. So yeah, it's quite an interesting time. I'm kind of started rereading all of the old stuff that came out since Disassembled. I know House of M held up really well, and I continue to love that book, and it gets better with each reread. Civil War, I'm kind of cold on these days. I mean, the first time I read it, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Second time I read it, though, it started to lose its luster, and I don't think it's one of those books I can reread again and again. World War Hulk was still fun, and it's a nice, you know, it was a nice break from all those other ones, because it's more of a revenge, it's a more of a mindless revenge story, really. But it just goes all wrong for Bruce. I also, you know, reread, you know, the Death of Cap stuff, the introduction of Bucky as Cap, and that continues to hold up really well. Ed Brubaker really did a fantastic job with that, with his book. And then after that, I read the build-up to Secret Invasion, and much like House of M, it really reads better over time, and I enjoyed how that book eventually turned out. And of course, it led us to The Dark Reign, which is the last year's worth of Marvel books. And again, I enjoy it quite a bit. It's really cool to read the story, you know, especially after a story that's been building up and gestating for the last few years. I gotta give, you know, the guys at Marvel props for the work that they put into these books, like Brian Bendis especially, because most of this stuff came from him, because of, you know, his original plans for Avengers. And I think, you know, with the exception of Civil War, I think I loved all these books, and I will look back upon this time very fondly, because I've never been more excited to go to a comic shop for like the past how many weeks, how many months and years. So, yeah, it's that time. You know, it's time to move on past that. It's time for the Heroic Age. Now I'm calling upon you, my listeners. The three or four of you. What was your favorite? You know, what is your favorite storyline from the last 5 years in the Marvel Universe? What's your favorite event that took place within this era where nobody can really trust anyone and the bad guys were winning? What was your favorite? I mean, House of M or Death of Cap? You know, you tell me. You can, of course, let me know by writing me to theloika@gmail.com. That's spelled theloika@gmail.com. And of course, I will read your responses here, and we will talk about stuff. Because that'd be fun, right? Anyways, I'm gonna take a break. I'll be right back, and we're gonna talk about Batman: The Return of Bruce Wayne and G.I. Joe Cobra Volume 2, Number 4. See you in a bit. Much DC books lately, because there's something about their overall direction that I wasn't really feeling. Now, I stuck around for the Blackest Night stuff, which is fun, and I pick up a few other random books here and there, and a lot of Vertigo books. But there's only one DCU book that I was absolutely in love with, and that's Batman and Robin by Grant Morrison and the ever-revolving cast of artists that he has on board. Now, I'm not going to talk about Batman and Robin, though, but I am going to talk about another related book, and it's called Batman: The Return of Bruce Wayne, Number 1. And this is such a fun book. It is written, of course, once again by Grant Morrison, and it's illustrated by Chris Sprouse with Carl Story. And it is a very, very good book. If you've read Final Crisis, then you know what happened to Batman. He was stuck in the beginning of time, basically, with cavemen, and somehow, some way, they couldn't figure out what had happened to him, because everyone thought he was dead. But here he is, in the past, trying to make his way back to the present day. But the thing is, though, he doesn't remember who he is, he doesn't know what's going on, and he's not quite himself. And that's really the only thing I will tell you about as far as major plot points in this book is concerned. But it's really, really cool to see Batman out of his element, trying to deal with things, just trying to get by. And it's amazing to see that even with half a brain, Batman is still a formidable force to be reckoned with. And you really should be picking this book up. It's issue 1 of a 6-issue miniseries. And once again, you can't beat Grant Morrison writing Batman. And, you know, and he's writing, you know, Batman the superhero. Not Batman the detective, mind you. A lot of people don't seem to understand that when he took on the writing chores for the Batman book, he took on writing Batman the superhero. Not Batman the detective. Not Batman the, you know, not Batman in a crime comic, but Batman in a superhero book. So there's a lot of crazy high concept stuff going on, and, you know, stuff that you don't normally associate with Batman. And I'm very happy to see, you know, Grant writing Bruce again. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next, because the end of this, because one thing that's not explained here is how he goes through all of time the way he does, and you will find out soon enough when you, if you read this book. And once again, it's Batman: The Return of Bruce Wayne, issue 1. Buy it, you'll thank me later. Now, there's another book that came out, but not last week or anything. It's been 2 weeks since this book came out. It's G.I. Joe Cobra, Volume 2, Issue 4. And in this book, we are finally introduced to probably one of the biggest players in the G.I. Joe story, who we haven't seen at all from the, since IDW relaunched, you know, the line. And he shows up at the very last page, looking very, very cool. Probably one of the best redesigns or reimaginings of a character I've ever thought of. And since the book's been out for a couple weeks, I will go ahead and spoil. Cobra Commander makes his first appearance in the IDW books, and he looks badass. And if you haven't been reading this book, G.I. Joe Cobra is, it's basically a book that features, of all people, Chuckles. Chuckles, of course, is the undercover agent that the Joes have, and he's, he's kind of like holding cover from Sleeper, if you read that book. He's deep cover in Cobra, and he's basically been sticking around to try and get as high as he possibly can within the Cobra hierarchy, and to do his job, and that's to take care of business, really, get rid of him. But the thing is, there were so many bumps on the road, including a death of someone that he cared for, you know, so that someone that he had to kill, basically, just so the mission wouldn't get all screwed up. And it's not too late to get into this book. There is a trade paperback out, Volume 1, containing issues 1 to 4, and the one-shot is out right now. And that kind of gets you up to speed on the character, and then you could pick up the first three issues, because I know they're still around. You should be able to find copies of issues 1, 2, 3, and then pick up number 4, because it's such a good read. It's such a good book. It's written by Christos Gage and Mike Costa, who is kicking ass in Transformers right now also. And of course, it's illustrated by Antonio Fuso, who is a brilliant artist, perfect for this kind of book. It's not knowing it's half the battle or any of that happy stuff. It's really hardcore spy story, or guy undercover infiltrating, and yeah, all the stuff that you like in an espionage story, it's here. And if I'm really, really hoping this book lasts for a long time. The second story arc is due in about a month and a half from now. It's going to feature the IDW debut of a character that's very much a very polarizing character in the G.I. Joe universe. And if you've seen the cover art or see the preview art, you probably know they're doing their own take on Serpentor. So, once again, G.I. Joe Cobra. They're going to drop the Volume 2 moniker after Issue 4, but it's called G.I. Joe Cobra. Look for it. And again, this is something you'll take me for. I mean, seriously, this is a book that made Crystal Ball look like a badass. I mean, remember that guy? Crystal Ball? He had the Hypno Shield or whatever it is. He looks like a badass here. So pick up this book. And again, you will thank me for it. And finally, I want to talk about something, a couple other things from other media. And I would like to talk about first Lost from this week. And I gotta say, I'm gonna make it as short as possible, because there's gonna be a lot of Lost talk in the next few weeks as we reach the end. That was a hell of a detour. It's an origin story that nobody really asked for, but I have no problem with it, because it's something else. But it's going to be something that a lot of people will be talking about and arguing about for some time, because it was very, very strange, because it was a complete detour from the main story, and it's basically focused on Jacob and the Man in Black. And not quite sure what they wanted to get out of it, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, once again, this is one of those things where if you watch everything in order and watch the whole thing in one fell swoop, you'll probably get a better appreciation for it. But again, we'll wait and see if I don't want to ruin anything, because I know a lot of people who wait for the DVDs before they watch it. But yeah, this is kind of a weird episode, and I'll let you be the judge of that. You know, I'll let you see for yourself what I'm talking about when all is said and done. And the episode actually is I gotta say, though, the acting was great. The, you know, the storytelling is great. The script was actually pretty good, too. It was just weird, and it just doesn't feel right. And this is episode 15 of the season 6. It's titled Across the Sea. So just watch it, and you tell me. Of course, if you have thoughts about this, you can send me an email. But I will give out that address again later. Next up, though, the last bit of business I want to talk about is Iron Man 2, which I saw twice, actually three times already within the last week. And I absolutely loved it. I thought Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer almost stole the show for me. And a couple others. Mickey Rourke, he turned out to be a lot better than I thought he would be. I mean, I was not quite high on him when he first got announced as playing Ivan Vanko. I wasn't quite sure what to make of him because I kept making fun of him and his possible Russian accent. And you know what? I'm going to eat crow. I was wrong. He actually turned out to be really, really good at it. The fact that he spoke a lot more Russian than he did English in the movie was very, very cool because it made the character a bit more believable. And his motivations were great as well. But, you know, there are, you know, it's not a perfect movie, obviously. There are some issues, and I will get to that in a bit. Don Cheadle, who makes his debut as Rhodey in this movie, I thought he did an admirable job, you know, taking over for Terrence Howard, who I thought really was a better looking, at least he looked more like Rhodey than Cheadle does. But you know, Cheadle does a good job kind of covering, and you know, you believe him as Rhodey, and that's really very important as far as the characters are concerned. You know, he sold the character well enough that, you know, I could deal with him not looking quite like, you know, the Rhodey I had envisioned since Terrence Howard, you know, brought the role to life in the first movie. Of course, the returning cast members, Gwyneth Paltrow and Robert Downey Jr., were fantastic in their roles. I absolutely enjoy the bickering between the two because, you know, it's very dysfunctional, very human relationship these two have. And, you know, Tony Stark in the movie is a very ridiculous guy. He puts poor Pepper into all kinds of bad situations. And the way they talk to each other, the way Pepper treats him like a child, or the way he would constantly keep asking for her attention and all this stuff, it's really good character work that was built, you know, that was first established in the first movie. And you know, I like that the characters seem to have grown a bit since between the beginning and the end of the movie. It's nice to see that the characters have grown a little bit and have matured right before your eyes. And a lot of people say that it felt a bit uneven, like the pacing was kind of off. I thought it was great because the pacing really. I mean, if it wasn't an action scene, it was a good character building scene, or it was a humorous moment. There wasn't really a moment where it felt dull and. The time went by really fast. I mean, I didn't even know the 2 hours had already passed. So it was definitely worth checking out. There are a lot of... Apparently there's also some Easter eggs in the movie as far as, you know, for Marvel fans. Like, there's apparently a scene in the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters where they are showing in the background footage from the Hulk movie. This is something I still need to look into further because it's showing like his rampage at the college... from the Hulk movie. And there is also there's also some other things as far as involving certain maps and certain hot spots in the Marvel universe. And I'm really anxious to see what they do next. And of course, if you had stuck around after the credits, you would have seen the big reveal that Thor's hammer is on Earth. Whether or not this takes place during the Thor movie or after is an entirely different story. But what I can say is that, you know, this takes place simultaneously with the Hulk, because you know what happened with Stark at the end of this movie leads him to go to where he appears at the end of the Hulk movie. So it's fun stuff, folks. I mean, I hope you guys watch this movie while it's still in the theaters, because you got to enjoy this in the big screen. And it's a very likable movie. Jon Favreau actually expanded on his role. You get to see more of Happy Hogan in the movie, and of course, and I haven't even mentioned Natasha Romanoff or Scarlett Johansson. She did really, really well as the Black Widow, I thought. Much better than I thought she would be. She kicked ass, and she was just gorgeous. She was great in this movie. And of course, finally, there's Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury, and I kind of have a small beef with that, with the way he handled the character, because he was too much. He was too Samuel L. Jackson. He was more Samuel L. Jackson than he was Nick Fury. But you know, I can forgive that. It's okay. But it was still a fun movie, and I like Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury. I like Ultimate Nick Fury a lot, so. It's all good. At any rate, that will be it for me this week. And next week I'll be back with more comic talk, maybe some Lost talk, and who knows what else. If you have any questions, comments, or anything, email me, theloika@gmail.com. That's spelled theloika @gmail.com. And you can also find me on Twitter, twitter.com/patloika. And of course, Facebook.com/patloika. You could... check out my blog over at Tumblr, patloika.com, and just enjoy whatever nonsense I put up there, because usually it's just me passing the time. And also I'd like to thank all of you folks who have donated to our Kickstarter campaign to fund the Villain graphic novel. I really appreciate all the support you have given us. For those of you that don't know, I've been trying to avoid using this podcast as a means to promote my stuff, because this is me basically talking about the stuff I'm enjoying. I try to avoid any other things. But we started a Kickstarter campaign with my friend Steve Earnhardt. He is the writer of the book called The Villain, which I draw. And we are preparing the graphic novel for release at San Diego Comic-Con this year. But knowing how things are as far as money and the economy is concerned, it's a bit difficult for us to fund the project on our own. So we came to the internet and use this site called Kickstarter to help us raise funds. And we have exceeded the funds that we need, you know, to print the book. And it's because of really, really cool people I'd like to thank right now. I mean, I have a total of 33 people who are putting back the book. I would like to thank Miss Jewel. I can't even list them here. I'll give them the proper... thank you at a later show once the campaign comes to an end. We still have a few days left in it, and we're still accepting pledges. Just go to kickstarter.com and look up The Villain, an original graphic novel, and you know, if you want to throw anything in there to help us, well, any extra money we earn really is going to go towards paying for our colorists, because our colorists work extra hard and work a lot of overtime to get this book ready on time. So check it out. And once again, this is Pat Loika, and I hope you guys have a good week. Take it easy. Listening to Loika Mania. All views expressed in this podcast belong solely to Pat Loika and his guests, and do not reflect the views of Derek Coward and the Deliberate Noise Network. For feedback or questions, please send them to theloika@gmail.com, and that's spelled theloika@gmail.com. And this podcast is a trademark of Pat Loika, all rights reserved, 2010.